Facebook appeals fine over Cambridge Analytica scandal, Bowen software update gets delayed, and hackers make a Tesla veer off into the wrong traffic lane. All of this and more here. Welcome to the Cutting Edge Tech. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to episode 9 of the Cutting Edge Tech. I'm so glad you could join me here on this new and exciting episode of the Cutting Edge Tech. So, I got some news that I've gathered throughout the week, just for your hearing pleasure. So, Facebook. We're talking about Facebook again. How surprising. But you remember our little buddy, our little pal, Facebook. They decided to go on a little data invasion, you could say, a little privacy invasion, if you will. So, they've recently appealed a fine over the Cambridge Analytica scandal. And for those of you who don't know, the Cambridge Analytica scandal was the scandal that Facebook was in, where a lot of data was leaked to because of Cambridge Analytica, and a lot of privacy was invaded, and a lot of things were discovered with that Cambridge Analytica scandal. So, they decided to appeal a fine over that little scandal, and to be honest, that looks kind of bad if they're that into data privacy as they so hit their chest with, oh, we're hardcore with our data privacy, we care about data privacy, we care about personal privacy. Then you got a fine for it. Why are you appealing for it? That doesn't look very good. Here in the piece for the Business Insider, it says, and I quote, "Britain's top data cop has called out Mark Zuckerberg after he published an op-ed calling for tighter regulation of internet companies. Information Commissioner Elizabeth Denham said on Monday that if the Facebook CEO is truly serious about privacy and data protection, then the company would drop its appeal against a £500,000 or $633,000 fine over the Cambridge Analytica scandal." She continues to say, and I quote, "In light of Mark Zuckerberg's statements over the weekend about the need for increased regulations across four areas, including privacy, I expect Facebook to review their current appeal against the ICO's £500,000 fine, the maximum available under the old rules, for contravening UK privacy laws," Denham said in a statement on Monday. "To a tech behemoth like Facebook, which has an annual turnover totaled almost at $56 billion last year, a $650,000 fine is a drop in the ocean." And they're right. I mean, if you're going to turn over $56 billion in revenue, which is basically what it means, a $650,000 fine, is just a tiny dip for such a huge turnover. Like, are you serious? You're going to appeal that little based on how much you win, and you say you're actually an advocate for data privacy? Because Mark Zuckerberg's statements sound like he was an advocate for privacy. Yeah, that doesn't look too good, buddy. Because I would understand that if you say, oh, we should increase regulation on these four areas, including privacy. Sure, and you're going to appeal to a $650,000 fine based on how much you win. So it just doesn't add up, because if you're going to turn over $56 billion and you're going to fight over a $650,000 fine, that's a slap in the wrist compared to what you win. And you're going to appeal that? And you say you're an advocate for data privacy. So you're basically picturing yourself as an advocate, not saying, but you're picturing yourself as an advocate for, you know, data privacy and increased regulations. That doesn't sound like someone who is very keen on data privacy. I mean, this is a scandal that you yourself created. The Cambridge Analytica scandal, you created this. And you fought your way out of it. And now you're going to fight over a small fine that the UK is going to put you just because of that same scandal. And you win over $50 billion last year. Buddy, you might want to review your case here. Because if you're going to do that, that doesn't sound too keen on you actually enforcing data privacy. It just looks like you're trying to avoid paying for a mistake that you yourself made and something that you say you're committed on fixing. Yeah, that doesn't sound like a good thing for me. It continues to say the fine would have been much higher if the breach had taken place after Europe's General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR, came into force. Under GDPR, serious breaches can result in fines of up to 4% of annual turnover, which in Facebook's case would translate to roughly $2.2 billion. In his op-ed, Zuckerberg praised GDPR as a step in the right direction for privacy regulation. What? So, you're saying that with the old GDPR rules, you would be safe because $650,000 is the max that they can give you. And with these new rules, you can get up to 4% of your turnover income. So basically, you would have, instead of paying $650,000, you would have had to pay $2.2 billion? Dude, just take it and leave. Or you're saying that you want to pay the $2.2 billion that you would have to pay at this moment in time. Is that what you're saying? Because if that's what you're saying, then damn. Okay, sure. No problem. Go ahead. But if you're actually being an advocate for data privacy and you're appealing for a fine which is just a tiny, 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 tiny bit of your turnover percentage, you're going to fight over that little tiny bit? Over a $2.2 billion that you would have had to pay if it would have happened right at this moment in time? You're going to fight for that? Seriously? Like, dude, I would have taken it. If I was a tech giant like you, if I was a tech giant like Facebook, and I had to pay a fine of $650,000, and I made $56 billion last year, I would have done it. Because I would be like, okay, here, I'm gonna pay my penalty, because I made this, you know? But I will own it up to myself, and I will continue to enforce data privacy as it's supposed to be. And I will not do what I just did again, so I can avoid another fine. Obviously, you're not going to say that you're going to do it just because to avoid another fine. But you can at least show that you're committed to what you yourself wrote in an op-ed. And not just be like blatant, like empty words. Because if that's all you're trying to do, you're doing it wrong. Okay, you're doing it really wrong. So you might want to check that out, Facebook. You might want to check out that little appeal thing. In my case, I would have just, you know, pay it up. Just pay and just go ahead with your life. All right? Make sure you don't breach any data privacy, but I would take it. I would, you know, hey, okay, here's $650,000. I made $56 billion, so whatever. Here, have some. Like, I would honestly do that. But that's my case. You know, that's my own, that was if I was in Zuckerberg's position. I would have done that. And I would commit myself to data privacy. But not everyone's like me. Not everyone has the same mentality as me. So, hey, what you gonna do about it? So it continues to say that a Facebook spokesman wouldn't confirm if the firm had any plans to drop the appeal. That's a mouthful. But pointed Business Insider to its original wording filed in November of 2018. At the time, Facebook's lawyer said that the ICO's targeting of the fine was overly broad and claimed that the ICO had found no evidence that UK users' data had been sold to Cambridge Analytica. Specifically, Facebook claimed the ICO found no evidence that the data of British users was shared with Cambridge Analytica by Alexander Cogan. Ugh, Jesus, what a name. The spelling of the name is Alec with a K. Xander with no E, Cogan. It's weird. At first I read it as like, Ale, what? But anyways, the researcher who invented the This Is Your Digital Life app, which scrapped users' data. And in quotes, the Facebook general counselor Anna Benkert, God, with these names. Anna, we'll just call her Anna, is a Facebook general counsel. Therefore, the core of the ICO's argument no longer relates to the events involving Cambridge Analytica. Instead, their reasoning challenges some of the basic principles of how people should be allowed to share information online, with implications which go far beyond just Facebook, which is why we have chosen to appeal. Sure. I don't know. Because she said that Facebook didn't target UK users, or at least there was no evidence that Facebook target UK users. But there is evidence that they target US users. And I get it that the ICO is from Britain, but hey, they have to do something about it, you know? Someone has to punish them for what they did. Because so far, I don't think I've heard that they fined Facebook or give him any punishments. I think they just give him a slap on the wrist like, hey, don't do it again. That's it. So at least one of them is actually, one of the countries is actually going like, hey, you did this wrong. You're going to pay for it. And I'm actually all in favor for that. Just like Germany said, hey, there's going to be some limits to what you gather. So here they are. You can gather more than this. And I applauded Germany at the time. You know, I applauded Germany for doing that. And I will applaud any sort of country that actually does that, because that's actually protection of the people, protection of the users. And I'm all for that. I'm all for data privacy. You guys know I'm a big advocate of data privacy. You know, I love me some data privacy. It continues to say, and this would be the end of the article, we find Facebook, this is a quote, we find Facebook because it allowed applications and application developers to harvest the personal information of its customers who had not given their informed consent. Think of friends and friends of friends. And then Facebook failed to keep the information safe, she said. That is pretty basic data protection. That was said by Elizabeth Denham, which was from the Information Council, the Information Commissioner. So basically, they said that they fined it because it allowed application and application developers to harvest the personal information of the customers, which is true. I have seen this in many apps that are developed by Facebook, that they collect information without, and some of them do with your informed consent. You know, you have to actually press a button that says allow. But behind the scenes, you never know what they do. Because, for example, I can code in a program, hey, this is what I'm going to gather from you. I'm going to gather your usage. I'm going to gather your name. I'm going to gather this information, your age, your gender, etc., etc. You know, they have those types of things plastered in there. But behind the scenes, I don't have to tell you what other things I want to gather. I can just program it like, hey, gather the email, gather the phone number, gather the direction. You know, there's many things that you can do behind the scenes and not inform the person straight up. And not even put it in the fine print. You can actually do that. But that is illegal because you didn't inform them that you're going to do this. So I get it that they're going to find that they're fining for that. And she's right. Denham is right. That is pretty basic data protection. Those are her direct words. And she's right. That is basic data protection. And I'm all for it. Like, ICO, you do your job. You're doing really good because that's a really, really, really well thought out process, and that's a really good way to actually tell them, hey, you have to do this, and we're fining you because of this specific reason. We're not just fining you just because you want your money. No, we're fining you because you did this. And like she said, and like the article said, giving oral evidence to a UK Parliament committee in November 2018, Denham said while it was correct that our investigation found no evidence to suggest UK users' data was breached, that wasn't what the fine was about. That's a quote from the article before the end. So, hey, she's fining Facebook for good reason, because they violated basic data protection. There's no two ways about it. Like, the Cambridge Analytica scandal, just, that is your perfect evidence that you are in a basic violation of data protection. And you should be punished for it. And like I said, I don't think the US courts actually did anything. They just stood there and watched Zuckerberg like stare into the ceiling or stare into their faces like a robot. Like that's where all the memes were coming out. Like all the memes of Zuckerberg going low, like staring blankly at the judges or anything. And I think they just got a slap on the wrist and keep on going. That which was stupid. And at least one of the nations are actually doing something about it. So good for them. Good for UK and good for Germany. Like, so far, Germany has enforced their laws into the data protection, and I'm all for it, you know. Like I said, I love me some data protection. So anyways, we'll be right back with some more here on the Cutting Edge Tech, so don't go anywhere, guys. are back here with the Cutting Edge Tech. Thank you for joining me. So, Boeing, our good old plane manufacturer friend. You're in a bit of a pickle, aren't you? So, Boeing software fix. I've told this in a few episodes back, I think two episodes back, that Boeing actually issued that they will release a software fix for the MCAS, which was the stabilizing programs, that they would release it by April, by the end of March, if I'm not mistaken, is what I said in the previous episode. Well, guess what? That software fix has been delayed. Shocker. So, here on Quarks.com, it says Boeing's software fix for the 737 MAX is taking longer than expected. That's a very bad thing to say. The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration, this is quoting from the article, said yesterday, and by yesterday they mean April 1st, which was on Monday, that more time was needed for a software enhancement to the 737 MAX aircraft that Boeing had expected to roll out to airlines no later than this month. The software update is meant to revamp the functioning of a new anti-stall flight system, whose presence only became widely known to pilots after a Lion Air flight crashed in Indonesia in October, killing all 189 passengers on board. Yeah, that's a little bit bad. Indonesian accident investigators found pilots that battled the Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System, or MCAS, which is designed to automatically pitch the plane's nose downward sharply to prevent an impending stall in response to data about the plane's angle. This is a quote from the regulator. The FAA expects to receive Boeing's final package of its software enhancement over the coming weeks for FAA approval. Time is needed for additional work by Boeing as the result of an ongoing review of the 737 MAX flight control system to ensure that Boeing has identified and appropriately addressed all pertinent issues, said the regulator. Upon receipt, the FAA will subject Boeing's completed submission to a rigorous safety review, as they should. That's an end quote. And the quote ends in safety review. So, as you may have well known, there were three crashes involved with the MCAS 737 MAX systems. So, those, to recap, it basically explained it in there, but to give you a little bit more of an info, the MCAS system is designed so that when the plane starts going up due to a design characteristics in the 737 MAX. The 737 MAX, if I recall correctly, their engines were a little bit forward because they were bigger engines, but the planes themselves were a bit smaller, meaning they were supposed to be a lot faster, a lot more fuel economic, and they tended to go upwards. Their nose, like the front of the plane, started to go upwards due to that design. And they installed a system that would basically tell the plane, okay, go back down. It would level the plane back to a horizontal flight and basically prevent the plane from stalling by going way too high. See, you know, from putting the nose way too high. And that's a pretty good system. But when the system starts killing everybody on the planes because of it, then you got a huge problem. Because don't tell me that you made a design for the programs, and eventually you found out that on the first flight, if that would have happened immediately after the first flight, I would be like, check that system and ground the planes. We are not going to have another accident like this. So ground the planes, check what's going on, and make sure you fix this thing. Otherwise, we're going to lose business. Like, that would be my first line of attack. Because you can't tell me that after one accident, they still continued with the flight of the 737 MAXs that were in different airlines. That is just absurd. Okay? So, they then, after the third accident, said that they were going to do a software fix so that the MCAS wouldn't interfere that much. And while that was going on, they said that some features on the plane were actually costing extra to implement, features that, as I said in my previous episode, would be able to save lives. And my major concern for that system was that they had the ability to warn the pilot that the system was kicking in. you know that the system was activating itself, because the system activates without the pilot's consent. So one of the things that I said in that previous episode was that you have two options. Either tell the pilot to have manual control over it, basically have manual control over it, or if you're not going to have the pilot have manual control over it, at least warn the pilot that you're going to do that. Warn the pilot that the system was kicking in, so that they can know, like, oh, okay, so the system's kicking in, so I better adjust myself. So, because the system had a pilot override. But how can you make a pilot override the system if they're not aware that the system is on? Because the system, like I said, activates with no consent, with no warning. It just activates randomly on itself. And one of the flights had problems with it, where it actually pitched down 20 times during flight. Like, 20 times during a flight, and you didn't do anything about it? Come on, guys. Like, get your head out of the sand. You know that there was a problem with that system, and you fixed it after 3 life-taking accidents. That is a blotch in your mark already, that you had to wait until a 3rd accident for that to actually be your main priority. I continue to say that was a complete mishandling of the situation. In the wake of the first crash, it continues to say, regulators began working with Boeing on software changes to address MCAS issues that troubled pilots, such as the fact that it was designed to deploy based on input from a single angle of attack sensor, and that it would repeatedly engage for 10 seconds at a time, powerfully redirecting the plane downward even after pilots had taken countermeasures. Oh, so with this piece, we just learned that even with the pilot countermeasuring it, even with that, the pilot couldn't have complete control over it. Now, that's even riskier. Because if the system would totally kick in, and for some reason there was a bug in the system, and the plane wouldn't be able to be controlled by the pilot consent, that would be instant death. Because you wouldn't be able to actually readjust the plane so that it wouldn't crash. Now, they better get that fixed. Because that can kick in really badly. It continues to say that pilots received no training in MCAS as the plane began to be used from the middle of 2017, with some 387 of them now in fleets across the world. That's another bad mark. Yeah, that's not good. Boeing, get your head out of the sand. Make sure you fix this before you keep making your brand basically non-existent. So, yeah, you better start doing something about it. As the software update was in development, an Ethiopian Airlines plane crashed on March 10, just 6 minutes after takeoff, killing all 157 people on board. Ethiopia had said that it expected to soon release a preliminary investigation report. Leaks from the investigation suggest MCAS was activated at the time of the crash and that, just as in the Lion Air tragedy, pilots were frantically trying to redirect the plane up until time ran out. Boy, Boeing, you really got yourself in really deep water, because with all the investigation that is going on, you guys made a very, very bad move with that MCAS. You should at least have the pilots trained on it. You didn't even train them on it. And with another piece, it said that they were training with like 2 hours max on an iPad, if I'm not mistaken. It said in the article that I read. With an iPad. Are you kidding me? You should put them in a simulation booth, just like they do in normal training. Like, if I'm not mistaken, they do in normal training that they put the pilots in a simulation booth and with real life scenarios. That's what you should have done with pilots. Not just give them an iPad and like, here, play with it. Like, no, that's not a way to train a pilot who is in charge of guiding a plane. A giant hunk of metal flying through the air with hundreds of people inside and basically risking the lives of those hundreds of people, including the pilots and the co-pilots and the stewardess and the flight crew, the passengers, everything. Like, come on. Seriously? An iPad. This is what gets me. An iPad for training to fly an airplane. Really? You guys better get your stuff together. This is not looking good for you, Boeing. This is not looking good for you at all. The company's vice president, this is a quote from the article again, the company's vice president of product development, Mike Sinnott, last week made a presentation of the company's Renton, Washington headquarters to pilots and airline executives, offering an overview of the changes planned for the MCAS, which included preventing it from deploying on a single sensor and limiting the maximum it can engage. Okay, so that's a good start. That's a pretty good start. So it's going to take more sensors to actually activate the thing, and it would minimize the maximum time that it would engage. Okay, that's a good start. An alert that goes off if the plane's two angle of attack sensors are in disagreement will also be made mandatory instead of optional. Good step there. And if they disagree with a preset amount, MCAS won't activate. Good. Airline pilots tested out the changes in a software simulator late last month. A recreation of the problems faced by the Lion Air pilots showed pilots in a similar situation would have just 40 seconds to save their passengers from disaster. Okay, 40 seconds to save from imminent disaster. That's a bit off. That's a bit off-putting, really. The FAA has been in the spotlight since the crashes, as serious questions swirl over how robust the safety certification for the MAX was. The agency has over the years outsourced parts of the certification process to airplane manufacturers themselves. The Department of Transportation's Oversight Office is auditing how the regulator certified the MAX, and last week its acting administrator appeared before a Senate panel to take questions on that. Alright, so based on this article, if we're to take it at face value, they're actually doing some good stuff with the system. They're actually changing some really important aspects of the software itself, which I'm really glad that they actually tell that. If we're to take this at face value, then that's a good thing, because that means they're actually taking matters into their own hands and actually doing good, doing the right thing with the system, actually fixing it to a way that it can be more pilot friendly and that the pilot has more time to engage in it, you know. And they're actually putting a simulator that they're doing a simulation for it, so that's pretty good too. They're actually doing actual training for it. That's really good. So if we're to take this at face value, then good for Boeing. They're actually taking those necessary steps to actually fixing the issue so that this doesn't happen again. That's good. So let's see where this goes. Hopefully this will develop during the coming days and the coming weeks. I just really hope that this system is ready as soon as possible so that those airplanes can actually get off from their runways and actually fly people in a safe manner. Let's see how this goes. I'll keep you posted with whatever news that happened with this. So let's see where this pans out. Alrighty, so we'll be right back with some more here at the Cutting Edge Tech. Don't go anywhere, guys. We'll be right back. And we are back here at the Cutting Edge Tech. Thank you for joining me. Now, let's talk a little bit about Tesla. So, Tesla is a company made by Elon Musk. He's been a big name in the news recently with the SpaceX programs, the Teslas, and everything that has been popping up, like the Tesla pickup trucks, the Tesla semis, and the Tesla Model S, and the Model Ys, which were the SUVs and the cars. He's known for making electric vehicles, and to be fair, the electric vehicles look pretty good, and they, so far, they're pretty good, they're pretty reliable, and everybody wants one, you know? But here's the thing. Hackers managed to hack a Tesla Model S, and they made it veer off into the wrong traffic lane. Now that is a scary thing, because that means that their softwares and their systems are vulnerable to hacking. And if they are hacked, they can provoke fatal accidents. This is not good. This is a piece from MIT Technology Review, and it says here, hackers trick a Tesla into veering into the wrong lane. This is from the article. Hackers have demonstrated some worrisome ways to manipulate and confuse the various systems on a Tesla Model S. Their most dramatic feat, sending the car careening into the oncoming traffic lane by placing a series of small stickers on the road. So basically, the Tesla Model S have a sensor technology that basically keeps the autopilot and engages once you do the autopilot, if I'm not mistaken, and they keep your car in lane. You know, it reads the stickers and reads the lines in the, not stickers, it reads the lines on the road, and basically keeps the car in lane so that it doesn't veer off accidentally in the autopilot, which was one of the most amazing things that I saw that made the Model S look very appealing, because it had an autopilot feature, and there were videos circling around that the autopilot feature could allow you to even go to sleep while you were on the road. Obviously, during the way, the autopilot that they first introduced came a long way from the one that is now. You know, it's a long ways away, because that first autopilot feature wasn't that smart. You know, it would actually, there was another video that came up afterwards, because I was scrolling through my feed, and then I saw that there was a video about the Tesla Model S's autopilot, which would show people playing cards, playing, you know, hand games and all that stuff. And then they showed them sleeping, and I was like, whoa, so you're saying that this car can continue running while you were even asleep, so you could take a nap on long trips? That's amazing. So, but the amazement and the excitement was short-lived, because after that, I saw a video of a Tesla Model S. The autopilot didn't stop on time, and it bumped into the car in front. I was like, oh, well, there goes that. But Tesla recently managed to actually allow a Tesla Model S with the autopilot feature to actually stop in a red light, which was really good. And I was so happy when that came out, because I was like, okay, so autopilot now is actually a good thing on the Tesla Model S. You know, it's a good achievement that they managed to actually make the car stop on a red light. And I know that there's self-driving cars already in Abu Dhabi and the United Arab Emirates, but this is the first autopilot that is here in the U.S. on a car that is distributed on the US, you know, for the average consumer. Well, not for the average consumer, because the car is still pretty high up, even though Tesla recently got a version of the Model S that ran for $30,000 on the market, if I'm not mistaken, which was a pretty good achievement. It's the amount of price that you would pay for like a normal Toyota Corolla and all that stuff. But I would say that it's in that range, but I'm not quite sure really. But a $30,000 to $35,000 Tesla Model S is quite an achievable amount of money for people that are, you know, middle class, upper middle class, which people that can afford it either by financing or buying it cash. It was a really good step in the right direction for electric vehicles in terms of Tesla, because I think the Model S's ran for $65,000, if I'm not mistaken, the standard edition. But now they managed to actually make a $35,000 one, which was really good. But I still have to dig a little deeper on that one. But I'm really interested, because I'm not gonna lie, I like the Teslas. You know, I'm a huge fan of the Tesla brand, even though they have a few things a little bit iffy with their management systems. You know, Elon Musk has been doing a few bit of kinks here and there, but I'm actually excited for Tesla. Like, I'm a good advocate for Tesla, okay? Like, I'ma say it straight off. I love Tesla. And I love SpaceX. I love everything that Elon Musk has done, because he's taken steps to places that very few people, private people, like private companies, have taken those steps to actually create those types of things. Like, he's innovative, and he's building the Hyperloop. He's with the Tesla Model S. He's with the, well, Tesla brand in general. And there's the SpaceX, and he was the inventor of PayPal, and we know that everybody now uses PayPal. Like, who doesn't use PayPal? There's very few people that I know that don't use it. And he was a man of change, and I'm really excited to what he has to do and what he has to offer in the future. I'm really excited. But this is kind of a problem, and this is kind of a worrying problem, really. Because if you can deviate a Tesla into oncoming traffic by just placing a few stickers on the ground, on the road, that needs to be looked at. It continues to say on the article, attack vector. This is an example of an adversarial attack, a way of manipulating a machine learning model by feeding in a specially crafted input. Adversarial attacks could become more common as machine learning is used more widely, especially in areas like network security. And it's true, you know, if you manufacture an attack that is specifically tailor-made to mess around with one of the systems, it is possible that you could actually screw with a lot of the systems, you know. Tesla's autopilot is vulnerable because it recognizes lanes using computer vision. Like I said, it has sensors and small cameras that can actually detect the lines on the road to stay in lane. In other words, the system relies on camera data analyzed by a neural network to tell the vehicle how to keep centered within the lane, just like I said. This isn't the first adversarial attack on an autonomous driving system. Don Sung, a professor at UC Berkeley, has used innocuous-looking stickers to trick a self-driving car into thinking a stop sign was a speed limit for 45 miles per hour. Oh, wow. Oh, okay. That's pretty scary. Another study published in March demonstrated how medical machine learning systems can similarly be tricked into giving the wrong diagnoses. Okay, that is really scary. Because if you can trick a machine learning system for medicine into this, we have a long way to go with machine learning. That is scary, because if you put a machine to actually give you a diagnostic on something, on a condition or something, that is scary that it can give you a wrong diagnostics. It continues to say that the researchers behind the lane recognition hack from the Keen Security Lab of Chinese tech giant Tencent? Wow. Tencent's not only making games, they're hacking Teslas. Oh god. Used a similar attack to disrupt the vehicle's automatic windshield wipers. They also hijacked the car's steering wheel using another method. A Tesla spokesperson told Forbes that the latter vulnerability has been fixed in its most recent software update. The spokesperson said the adversarial attack was unrealistic, given that a driver can easily override autopilot at any time. That is true. That is a feature that was included in the autopilot, that you can cancel the autopilot if the driver takes control of the wheel. Like a pilot, which is the driver itself, can take control of the car if it starts to veer off or something. Which kind of kills the whole, oh, I can sleep while this car drives itself thing. Because even in the manual, it says that you need to stay alert and not give the autopilot the full control. Which is understandable, really, but hey, you can eventually, on the long run, we'll be able to sleep on the car while the car drives itself. I'm picturing that in my mind, and I'm really looking forward to that, because honestly, sometimes long trips can be very tiresome, and you can go on without stopping, and the car would actually behave in a way like a normal driver would. Like, if that happens, I would be so happy. Because that means I can take long trips, take a nap, and then go back to driving, you know? That's something that I would love to do. But anyways, that's basically one of the things that I would love for it to happen. We'll just wait and see how this goes. Hopefully this gets fixed and the software updates. That's another thing. That's a little side note. That's another thing I like about the Teslas. You get software updates with this thing. Like, it's a regular computer that gets software updates like an operating system. That's awesome. Like, to me, that's pretty awesome. So anyways, that's it for this episode on The Cutting Edge Tech. Thank you so much for joining me here today. Remember to like my page on Facebook. Yes, I know I rip on Facebook a lot, but hey, that's the only platform I can get this thing out. But, you know, you'll have to forgive me for using a platform I rip on a lot in order to get this podcast out. But hey, it's the only way that I can get it out. For now. So anyways, thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you so much for tuning in. Remember to like the page to stay up to date to whatever I do with this podcast. Thank you so much for everyone who has given support to this podcast and this new adventure that I'm overtaking. This has been amazing, and I'm really looking forward to continuing this. Please share with your friends, share with your family. Make sure you all tune in for next Wednesday for another episode of The Cutting Edge Tech. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, keep it teching, my friends. I'll see you guys on next Wednesday. Cutting Edge Tech is a technology news podcast focused on the latest news that occurred during the week between episodes. The opinions expressed in this podcast are strictly from the host and should not be taken as absolute facts. If you'd like to suggest a news article to be discussed in the podcast, send it to me at cutting.edgetechpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear them. Thank you, and see you in the next episode. And remember, keep it techie, my friends.